Switch on. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11 this morning. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We'll get there in a minute. How many people are afraid of change? Right? You start talking about the church, and you start talking about change, and all of a sudden people get a little nervous. They get a little antsy. So I found this poster, and I thought it was perfect. It says, "Afraid of change? Leave it here." So here you go. That's where we're going to put our change. Kind of a different kind of change, but you know what I'm saying. We appreciate Pat brought in our first full bucket or first full can. Thank you. I dumped that in a while ago. We had been saving some money up in there anyway. So don't forget that that's the kind of stuff that just adds up little by little. It's so cool to see our bar rising so quickly already. That's out of your generosity, and you know, who knows what God has in store for us in the next months to years or whatever else. And so it's just good stuff. So we'll just get our a little bit at a time done. Little Johnny is always teased by his friends at school. They think he's stupid, dumb. Boy, Johnny's just the dumbest little kid that lives, and they can prove it every single time. Because what they do is they tell Johnny, they go, "Hey, do you want this big nickel or do you want this little dime?" And Johnny every single time goes, "Oh man, that nickel is big. I'll take the nickel." So he takes the nickel. He puts it in his pocket and he goes on. And it goes on, you know, a few days later, they try and prove how dumb Johnny is, how dumb Johnny is. And so finally, his friend, a new kid comes into town. His name's Billy. And Billy befriends Johnny. And he says, "Hey man," he goes, "I know you're smarter than that." He goes, "I know good and well you know that a dime is more than a nickel. Why do you keep taking the nickel?" And he says, "Well, as soon as I take the dime, they'll quit offering me the dime and the nickel." So far, I've made about $5, right? I just keep making my money. I'm going to keep making my nickel. He's smarter. Sometimes we're smarter than we think we are, and sometimes we're dumber than we think we are. Sometimes we think we know more than anybody else, right? Do what?
You just came right at
her. Oh. I just thought I'd leave the safety of my stage, but psychology experiments have shown that the more people pay for something, the more they value it. You realize that the more you pay for something, the more you value it. And so this concept goes throughout. People that were given a placebo pill, right? It's basically a pill that has nothing in it. But they're twice as likely to have their pain disappear when they're told that the pill was expensive. They're twice as likely to have their pain disappear when they're saying, "Oh, by the way, this is a really expensive pill. You need to take it." People who pay more for tickets are more likely to attend the performance. If you pay a lot of money for a ticket, you're more likely to go to that particular performance. If somebody gives you the tickets, you're more likely to say, "Eh, we were given the tickets anyway. Let's just not go." When people want the best, they look to the price to tell them which one is the best. They think that the expensive headphones sound better than the less expensive headphones. They think that the expensive steak tastes better than the less expensive steak because it costs more. So our perception about cost and our perception about value is sometimes skewed. In 2017, researchers conducted a study to find out how much consumers' enjoyment of wine was influenced by its cost. That was interesting because I read several of these surveys and about three of them had wine, which I don't know why wine's such a big deal. But anyway, study participants were asked to sample wine while they were hooked up to an MRI scanner, right? So it's showing their brain movement. I mean, they can actually do these testing with scientific evidence. And so they ask them to taste this particular wine. It's the exact same wine, but given a different price. The expensive wine in the MRI, I mean, so it's not like we just perceive it. It literally happened. Got more brain activity, and people said, "Yeah, that wine is a good wine. It's a really good wine." They were told the more expensive wine, even though it's the same, was the best wine and it tasted better, and they gave reasons why it tasted better. Again, another experiment took two bottles of wine, in exact bottles of wine, wrapped them in different covers, and said, here, this one's $29, and this one's $12. And people who like wine, I would hate all of them because I'm not a wine drinker. I don't like wine at all. But the $29 wine was so much better than the $12 wine, coming from the same bottles, coming from the same scenario. In fact, 85% of those who tasted the wine said it was way better, it smelt better, the color was better, and that it left a better aftertaste. 85%. You say, well, Mike, I didn't think we came to church to learn about wine tasting experimentation. Well, I understand that. What does that have to do with the text this morning? Perception. It's amazing how we perceive things. Scientifically, it's proven that our brains react in certain ways. And so here's Paul, right, going through all of these problems in the Corinthian church. Nothing's changed. I mean, here we are 2,000 years later, and yet nothing has changed with humans and perception. Because Paul is going through what he's going through. I don't. Those of you that hear Wednesday night, I love the summary that we had, the little video, and that was just so cool to me to see all of the summarizing of Corinthians so far and what we're going to be talking about. But Paul's dealing with all these different issues. One of the issues is whose little crew is better than the other's crew, right? Because some follow Jesus, some follow Peter, some are following Apollos, and some are following Paul. There's also a dilemma in that Paul and Barnabas have not taken any money from the congregation. They're not accepting any cash. They're not accepting any contributions. I think part of the reason for that is so they don't accept some money from one of the little divisions and not accept it from another, and then all of a sudden they're beholding to them, right? We use a phrase, no strings attached kind of thing, but there's going to be strings attached if he accepts the money. But it's interesting to me that in not only in 1 Corinthians, which we'll get to 1 Corinthians 9 in just a minute, but go ahead and look at 2 Corinthians 11, 7 through 9. I appreciate Hunter reading this for us a minute ago. So because he doesn't accept the Corinthians' money, all of a sudden they think he's a cheap apostle. Their perception of him is that, well, if you're not like the other apostles and you're not going to do things the way the other apostles are, then you must not be as much of an apostle. They think he's inferior. In fact, I love the Living Bible's actual verbiage because he says, did I do wrong and cheapen myself and make you look down on me because I preached God's good news to you without charging you anything? Instead, I robbed other churches by taking what they sent me, and I used it up while I was with you so that I could serve you without cost. And when that was gone and I was getting hungry, I still didn't ask you for anything. For the Christians from Macedonia brought me another gift. I have never yet asked you for 1 cent, and I never will. They're treating Paul like he's the $12 wine. I mean, he's a legit apostle. He's the one who came and established Corinth. Go back and look at Acts chapter 18. In his missionary journeys, he goes through Corinth. Just pretend for the sake of argument that I helped establish Open Door. I didn't, but just pretend like I did. And that I traveled through different cities. And then I come back to visit. And I'm like, don't you remember when I showed up at Broken Arrow? And we had these conversations and we got people together and we started this congregation and your love for the Lord and on and we would go, right? And so Paul is saying that to the Corinthians and saying, look, I started you guys. I got you guys in the middle of this Christianity thing and understanding what grace was and what mercy is and compassion and Jesus. And we were part of this and we've never accepted a dime from you. Not asking for money now, but it doesn't make me less of an apostle because I don't ask for money. And let me tell you something, it is the right of every apostle and elder and ministers, we talked about this past Wednesday night, to receive their living from the gospel, right? I mean, it's a command of God, actually, and we'll look at 1 Corinthians in just a minute. Paul is not considered valuable. He's just not considered valuable to them. And I think that's a sad, sad thing for the Corinthians. And on the other side of that, again, I think that Paul is trying to be very careful who he would have taken money from, because you have these different problems going on, these different groups. And so that's kind of where we are. Paul says, look, I do what I can. I do what I do because I can. I do what I do because I'm compelled to preach. It's what God called me to do. And I would love to echo those words this morning. It's what God called me to do. And I'm so thankful that I'm given the opportunity to preach, right? I get to do that because I've been compelled to do it, Paul says. I get to do what I do because I love God and I love you, he says to the Corinthians. And I care about where you are and where you're going to be. And me and Barnabas just happen to like to work a little bit extra sometimes. And we make tents. And so we're tent makers. And so you don't have to worry about giving us money. We get it from other places, but that doesn't mean that we don't deserve it, and it doesn't mean that we couldn't get it from you. We're just choosing not to, but somehow or another, you think that we're not legitimate apostles as a result of this. And so he writes this in 1 Corinthians 9, verses 1 through 18. If you were here Wednesday, you heard a little bit of this already, but this is what the text we talked about. So Paul asks some questions. He says, am I not free? Verse 1. Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not the result of my work in the Lord? Even though I may not be an apostle to others, surely I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. I'm the one who started this. This is my defense to those who sit in judgment on me. Don't we have the right to food and drink? The answer to that would be absolutely yes. Don't we have the right to take a believing wife along with us, as do the other apostles and the Lord's brothers and Cephas? Or is it only I and Barnabas who lack the right to not work for a living? Now, it's interesting to me that Paul is actually going to make the argument that he's a legitimate apostle based on the fact that he deserves their money. I deserve your money just as much as any other apostle deserves your money. I deserve to make a living from the gospel just as much as Cephas does, just as much as Apollos does, just as much as James or any of the brothers of Christ. I deserve it just as much as they do. I don't choose to accept it, but I deserve it just as much as they do. In fact, you guys should be good givers. Not you guys, but yes, us too. But the Corinthians should be great givers. They need to provide the opportunity for these men to do what they do. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17 reminds us elders should be counted worthy of double honor, that they could, literally elders or ministers or anybody that's doing the work of the church, could be counted as having double honor, and they deserve their pay. I love this concept. This was in the commentary that I read. It said this: the church does not pay its ministers. Okay, the church does not pay its ministers. It provides them with resources so that they are able to serve freely. So they can do what they do, right? So yes, you guys provide the opportunity for Karen and I to minister to this congregation, but you also provide us the opportunity to do what we do wherever we are. You know, I feel so blessed. Karen feels so blessed that you guys provide for us the opportunity to minister wherever we go. It's not just in these walls. It's not just in this room. It's wherever we go. It's the opportunity when somebody calls and says, hey, I need some help. I'm available. I'm most likely available. I had the opportunity to help somebody this week, and they're like, well, I don't want to take you away from your studies. Well, that's cool. I mean, I like my studies, but I'm here to minister. And so to be a servant is what I'm here to do. So, yes, that is, with an exclamation point saying, yeah, if Mike is available, if Karen's available, we will help, right? Because we can. You guys provide us that opportunity. And I help friends and acquaintances and not just people from this congregation because that's what you help me to do. You partner in this work. And so Paul is saying these same things. Then he's going to give three examples. He's really going to give four, but he's going to give three right away. And I love that there's a spiritual example with these physical examples. So he says, looking at verse 7, who serves as a soldier at his own expense? I mean, don't soldiers get paid to go fight in these battles and fight in these wars? Some of them charge people for what they do, but most of them are salaried. Salarium, you know, actually is the Roman word where we get the word salt. Salarium, salary, is put together in the same exact way because they would sometimes pay them in salt. But who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who wears the armor of God? Spiritually, we wear the armor of God. And aren't we soldiers of Christ who arise? Right? So spiritually, we're soldiers. And so Paul is kind of making that argument. And then he says, who plants a vineyard does not eat its grapes. He's one that's planting the seed. Each one of us, as we talked about this morning in Bible class, we're planting seeds of the gospel. We're allowing others to water. Sometimes it's God that gives the growth. Sometimes it's others who are partnering in that. He actually says those things in this same letter. But who plants a vineyard? Who plants the seeds of the gospel? We reap what we sow. So he gives that spiritually. And then he says, who tends a flock and doesn't drink the milk? Right? Shepherds. Ministers or pastors or shepherds of the flock of Christ. And then verse 8, I love this. He says, do I say this on my own authority? No. I mean, I can. I've just given you some points. But he says, doesn't the law say the same thing? God authored this, Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 4. For it is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain. All right? Emery, you know what a muzzle is? Can you eat when you got a muzzle on? Nope. It's a good diet tool, right? This would go on a campaign to start selling muzzles. That'll save us from having to worry about diets, right? You can't eat. But who muzzles an ox while it's treading? The ox is doing the work, and then it gets hungry and it stops and it's like, man, I'm you know, not that the ox can speak, but it's like, I'm hungry. And so they go, oh no, we're going to muzzle the ox while it works. We're not going to allow it to eat anything that it's treading out. No, you don't muzzle. You let the ox eat because it's working and it's doing its job. So Paul is using this example from Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 4. It's used again in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17 and simply saying, don't muzzle me. Don't put a muzzle on me and say that I can't eat or participate in not only the physical blessings of you as a church, but also in the spiritual blessings. You guys don't count me as legitimate somehow or another. You don't think I'm the apostle I need to be, but I deserve what God has given me as the fruits of my labor with you guys. And he basically says it like this. I don't want to take anything from you, but I want to enjoy the fruits of my labor. And I feel like you guys don't think I'm a legit apostle or don't give me the accreditation that I deserve as your apostle, as your minister, because for some reason you think we need to pay. You know, we need to receive some pay. And maybe, just maybe, they're thinking, well, if we don't pay them, we don't have any control over them. I have no idea. But, you know, when I preached in Abilene, I mentioned this last Wednesday night, I preached in Abilene about, I don't know, well, Christmas time, while we were gone and enjoying that time. Our really good friend Mike Tackett was here this week, and he received the ministry job there. We're so excited about it. It wasn't somebody asked, well, were you guys trying out? Like, no, we weren't trying out. We just went to a congregation and had the opportunity to preach. My whole family was there, and it was just a blessing. And I told him, I said, look, I the congregation at Broken Arrow, they give me money. I don't need anything from you guys. It would be a blessing for me to come, and my whole family can be there. And not only will they all be there, and I'll bring 30 people to your congregation, which you should love. We set a record for attendance that morning. I was like, well, of course we did. We had 30 people with us. And it just gave me the opportunity to preach, right? And that's what I wanted to do for them. They had different members preaching, and I thought, well, you know, somebody can take a break and enjoy their family, and I'm going to enjoy my family and get to do what I love to do. And so anyway, I preached, and then afterward he handed me a check. And I went, no. And I said, I don't want the check. And he said, we don't muzzle our oxen here. That's exactly what he told me. He says, you need to take this check. And I went, okay. And I said, well, then I'll take it. I said, but I didn't want it. He goes, I know you don't want it. He goes, but we don't muzzle our oxen. And I thought, that's so cool, because he understands this concept. You know, we want to give you something. We want to bless you. How you do with it what you want, but we want to bless you. So look at the latter part of verse 9. Is it about oxen that God is concerned? I mean, this is cool that Paul is actually offering a commentary / teaching on this passage from the Old Testament. And he says, well, is it about oxen that God's concerned? Surely he says this for us, doesn't he? Isn't he really talking about us? Isn't he talking about human beings? I mean, yeah, he's going to take care of the birds of the air, and he's going to take care of the flowers of the field, and he's going to take care of oxen, but he's going to take care of us people too. And God is trying to help us understand a concept. Yes, this was written for us, because whoever plows, whoever threshes, should be able to do so in the hope of sharing in the harvest. If we have sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much if we reap a material harvest from you? If others have this right of support from you, shouldn't we have it all the more? But we didn't use this right. Paul says. Didn't take advantage of what we could have taken advantage of. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. That's Paul's heart right there. He says, I'll do anything I can possibly do to make sure that the gospel of Christ is preached. If it means that I've got to work for a living, I'll work for a living. If it means that I've got to be a Jew, then I'll be a Jew. If it means I got to be a Gentile, I'll be a Gentile. If it means I have to be a slave, I'll be a slave. Whatever it takes. I mean, I'll do anything short of sinning to make sure that I can preach this gospel. And I want that to happen. And he says, well, let me give you one more example. Look at verse 13. Don't you know that those who serve in the temple get their food from the temple? And that those who serve at the altar share in what is offered on the altar? I mean, it's going back to Old Testament, the priests, right? The tribe of Levi, they didn't work. They worked the temple. All the other tribes took care of them. In the same way, verse 14, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. So we get our living from the gospel, Paul says. Me and Barnabas could get it if we needed it, but we chose not to. But you've cheapened us and made us less of apostles and teachers because you think that since you do something for free, it means you're not as valuable. And Paul says, we are very valuable. And he doesn't say that on his own. He says that because he's a servant of God. He says, man, don't lessen anything that I say to you because we don't work for money for you guys. Because my gospel is the gospel that was given to me by God. I have not used any of these rights, verse 15, and I am not writing this in the hope that you will do such things for me, for I would rather die than allow anyone to deprive me of this boast. For when I preach the gospel, I cannot boast, since I am compelled to preach. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel, Paul writes. If I preach voluntarily, I have a reward. If not voluntarily, I'm simply discharging the trust committed to me. What then, verse 18, so huge, what then is my reward? Just this, that in preaching the gospel, I may offer it free of charge and so not make full use of my rights as a preacher of the gospel. And he goes on, and we'll talk about this next week, he'll go on to talk about the reason he does what he does. And starting in verse 19, there's not a one of us in this room that can't utter those exact same words. I do what I do because I'm looking toward something better. I do what I do, not because of what I receive here. I do what I do because of something better. I'm excited to do what I do. I love what I do. And if somebody else comes and preaches to you and you need to pay them, then pay them. They're allowed to have it. It's okay. You don't muzzle the ox. But we're not going to do it that way. And because we don't do it that way, we hope that you realize how much we love you guys and how much we want to preach this gospel.
Almost made it all the way. I'm so thankful for you guys. Really am. I mean, I went to school for so many different things, and I knew what I wanted to do when I was a kid and as a teenager, and that was my goal and my ideas. I mean, took me about 3 years for God to beat me hard enough across the head to make me realize what I was supposed to do for him, because it was really all about me. I was always really good at making money and doing business and doing those kinds of things, and I that's what I wanted to do, because it was just something that meant a lot to me. And God called me into ministry when I was about 19 and a half years old. And I just refused to hear what he had to say to me. But he kept putting all the right people in all the right places. And throughout my life, it has been an incredible journey of faith and reliance on him. And quite frankly, that's what you guys provide for us, is this opportunity to share in this ministry at Open Door. And we're thankful for you. If it wasn't for Open Door, I would probably be doing something else, quite frankly. Jim and I's lunch on several occasions gave us those opportunities. You know, the funny thing about it is somebody said, why didn't you go into preaching sooner? I said, because I actually cry a little bit every once in a while. Have you ever noticed that? And I said, every once in a while. And I said, you know what? I just don't want to stand in front of people and get emotional, so I don't need to preach. Somebody else that's better at that than me can do that. And then through the years, God said, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So, you get to see me cry. And you let me cry. It is what it is. So, we're really blessed. We are. Wanted to take advantage. I mean, when we're gone, like last week, end with this, I promise. You know, it's like part of us is missing. I bowled really good on Saturday and then bowled horribly bad on Sunday. And I always say, yep, that's God going, see, you should have been at church. Shouldn't be missing. Shouldn't be missing. So we won't be going back next year. But thank you for just the opportunities that you provide through your contributions. I'm excited about what God is showing us in so many different ways. But it's just wonderful every time I get an opportunity to be with people outside of even these walls. The advantages that I get as a minister of the gospel. I had a guy ask me, four in the last 6 months, will you do my funeral? And the one that asked me 2 weeks ago, that was probably the highlight of my month, because I didn't think that we were connecting on that level. And so he says, I can't think of anybody else that I would want to talk about me when I'm dead. And I said, well, I'm not going to talk about bowling. And he goes, I know you won't. And he goes, that's why I want you to do it. Incredible guy. Excitement. So you guys get to be a part of that. Sometimes you hear about it from me, but you don't see the interactions in the ministries that happen as a result of what I get to do for you and for the kingdom. So, again, thanks.